From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
We're back, we're bad, he's black, I'm white, we're not sure who should move first in this game because the rules are really confusing, but nonetheless it is The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Good evening.
Hey, good evening, Trent, how are you today?
Very well, awesome to be here, awesome to be back in the studio
yeah,
for another week.
It's great to be back. We have got a huge show for you tonight, jam-packed with all sorts of goodies. We are going to talk about the sort of games you can play in the pub with your mates over a few adult beverages.
In public?
In public,
like
out, getting
being seen by
out,
regular
being outed as gamers, absolutely.
What? Oh, goodness.
We're also going to talk to Wade Dyer, an Aussie guy from Melbourne, I believe, mm-hmm. who has created a fantastic new RPG. I talked about it just the other day in the Kickstarter roundup. We've got Wade on the line, or an interview at least with him, talking about his RPG Fragged Empire, and we've got more game awards that you can poke a stick at. Not us personally, but we're going to talk about some game awards that have been around lately on the Dice Men Cometh tonight.
That's right, because we're not too proud to ride on other people's coattails.
Absolutely.
Or to join a party which is already in progress, like this one. We're a little bit late to the baby metal party.
Oh, yeah.
But here we are nonetheless. Woo! Baby metal, and I think it's called Gimme Chocolate.
Chocolate!
On Edge Radio, 99.3 FM, it's The Dice Men Cometh. Japanese J-pop set to death metal blast beats.
Yeah.
Okay, what could possibly go wrong? Imagine my disappointment when I listen to the whole album, it's crap.
Yeah.
That's easily the best track on the album.
Look, clearly it's been dreamed up by some marketer. And
there's nothing wrong with
well,
that.
Well, look, it went pretty much viral when it hit the internet about 2-3 months ago. I don't know. Are they going to tour Australia, you reckon?
They're touring, big dates, big festivals and stuff. Or they have been. But you know what? The album sounds like, and anyone who's versed in metal is going to recognize this, there was a horrible moment in the sort of mid to late 90s, just kind of before nu metal broke, where, okay, the absolute nadir of metal for me is the Spawn soundtrack. Remember the movie Spawn?
Mm.
Okay, and it was all metal bands forced to play with hip-hop bands. It was awful.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Run-DMC had done that years before with Aerosmith. Anyway, we're here to talk board games.
We've got to talk about some games, not some Japo metal.
Have we been playing anything lately? Why? Yes, we have.
We have.
Because we like to do that. I've been playing a little game called Blueprints, which is, I guess it's an architecture-themed game. Sounds exciting.
Yeah.
You're making little buildings from dice.
Oh.
There's a huge pool of dice that you're rolling and throwing into the middle of the table, and there's different types of dice representing different materials, wood, stone, glass, recycled materials, and you've got a little blueprint card behind a screen. You choose one dice and you build according to the blueprint, or you can ignore the blueprint and make your own building, and you get points based on the end construction. You get like skyscrapers built 5 dice high, or you get points for the mix of materials that you've got. If you've got all dice with the same pips on face up, okay, then you get points for structural integrity, that kind of thing. I know. Yeah,
you make this sound really interesting, you know, because here's the thing is, I played that game.
Mm.
None of that theme was mentioned. Like, there was a black dice, a clear dice, a white dice, and a green dice.
Yeah, sure. You can literally build a glass house.
There was a card that says you've got to put your dice in this shape.
Yep.
You've made it sound like a hell of a good game. The game itself, having now heard what the theme is supposed to be, the game doesn't live up to it.
No, look,
it was a bit of fun.
It's very nice. It's a good intro to a game night or a little bit of a filler. It comes in a nice small box and it's very nice production and all
well
of that
stuff. Yeah, it's well
presented.
The dice are good and solid.
It's just not particularly exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine for what it is and, if you can get it for cheap, then
yeah,
go for it. Blueprints was the name of that
one. It's definitely worth a try. Look, as some of our listeners may have seen, we visited, or revisited for me, Dungeon Lords, the 2009 title by our good friend Vlad Hrtl.
One game that of his that I hadn't played.
Yeah. And so one of our listeners actually requested that we play that one and his other one, Dungeon Pets. Now, it was a bit too much to squeeze them both into one night, but we got one of them to the table.
And particularly because it was John. We're always talking about John. Yeah. John, we love John.
Yeah.
John's old, but we still love him. And he takes a long time to explain games. It took a good 45 minutes to an hour to explain this one to us.
That's right.
And we got halfway through the game in less time than that. Yeah. And I was thinking, we've been here all night.
And
oh,
look,
my God.
It reminded me of what a great game it is. I mean, again, it's one of those, I guess, typically a worker placement game where you've got a number of little pieces that you put out, and where you put your pieces, that's what action you get to do.
Yeah.
And the thing with this game, as with so many worker placement games, is, you know, there's so many things to choose from.
But what a great...
And you've only got three choices.
What a great idea for a game, though. You're the guy who runs the dungeon in Dungeons & Dragons that the adventurers are coming in to raid, and you've got to put the dungeon together to make it as challenging as possible.
Yeah, and, you know, you hire monsters to come and be in your dungeon. You buy traps that you can put in your dungeon to trap the adventurers. Of course, you've got to feed your monsters. You've got to pay your monsters. And the evil-o-meter, I thought, was very, very interesting, where if you hire two bad a monster, if you go to town and you beat up the villagers so you can get cheaper food and more money, then of course your reputation grows as being more evil. But if you get too evil, then the great paladins come and they want to attack your dungeon.
Well, if you're only, you know, semi-evil or quasi-evil, then you get the lesser adventurers.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to do, at least at the start. But, yeah, I kind of...
It didn't really work.
And, did it? No.
And, no, you actually had the Uber Paladin come and visit you.
Oh, my God.
And do a big smackdown on you.
Couldn't stop him.
Now, just for the record, I won this game. Where did you come, Trent?
I don't want to talk about it, Mark.
You came last?
Let's move on to...
Anyway, Dungeon Lords,
don't pick on me.
I highly recommend it.
This is the first time I played this game.
See, even losers enjoy it.
You had played it a bunch of times.
Twice.
Okay. I don't know what it is. The more... Look, it's not my fault I'm stupid.
I don't think it's because you're stupid, Trent.
Then what is it?
Okay, it is.
Nonetheless, I enjoyed Vlad Hrtl's Dungeon Lords, and I would like to try and play it again.
Yeah, look, we'll definitely get to the table.
Maybe
again.
Without you.
And we are definitely going to give Dungeon Pets a run. We track down a copy locally, and once we've learned the rules, which we should set aside a few more hours, we will get that one, and we will post some photos.
In all seriousness, I did really enjoy the game, but yeah, it is such a big investment, and there's so of time, and it's also not a cheap game either, because there is, you know, a lot of components with it. But it's one of those games where you really do have to play it quite a few times to fully understand everything that's going on. There are so many games coming out all the time. It suffers because of that investment that you need to make. I'd have to play that 5-6 times before I fully grokked everything in it. You know what I mean?
And I mean, look, isn't it the only game you've ever played where you've had to pass an exam before you're allowed to play it at the start?
Literally, there's an exam.
There's four training scenarios to get you to understand how the heroes attack, how you use your traps, how you use your monsters, how they get into your dungeon. There are these four training scenarios, and of course we sort of laughed and said, yeah, but you don't need to play all four. But you sort of do, because if you stuff up that bit, you're screwed
Everything falls apart. So we heartily recommend Dungeon Lords for anyone who's unemployed and has a mysterious supply of money that we don't want to talk about. Now, speaking of mysterious supplies of money, crowdfunding and Kickstarter, and a bloke by the name of Wade Dyer, and his RPG, Fragged Empire, which is going off on Kickstarter as we speak. We'll talk to him next.
All right.
On the Dice Men Cometh, Edge Radio, 99.3 FM.
That was the Murlocs with Paranoid Joy. Speaking of Paranoid Joy, you're here with the Dice Men, and we are... We're not paranoid.
No, we're not. What are you talking about?
We've got a lot of joy bringing you games, talking about games.
That's better.
And now we're going to share with you the designer, the author, if you like, of the Fragged Empire RPG, currently funding on Kickstarter and doing very, very well. Trent spoke to him earlier in the week about his RPG and about Everything else he's up to, Wade Dyer.
So, Wade, thanks for joining us on The Dice Man Cometh.
Thanks, Trent.
You have knocked Kickstarter out of the park with Fragged Empire. You got funded in just 12 hours. And, yep. Look, I don't know. I don't even know where you're at right now with your funding goals. What is your secret, Wade? Why has it been so successful?
I think it's a couple of things. RPG culture is really supportive of sort of indie developers. Kickstarter culture, really supportive of it. And I think also the fact that I'm very passionate about this. This is not a money grab for me. It's something I love. And hopefully that comes across. So
there are so many RPGs on Kickstarter. Mm. Why do we need another one? Why do we need another bloody science fiction universe?
Yeah, there are a bunch of Kickstarters. I got two minds of this one. The first one is I just think the more things out there, the better. I don't think we can get saturated. I think RPGs are an innately creative medium, so let's have more of it. Second thing is, though, I think I probably do bring something different to the table with mine, though. Like, even though I am an indie sort of project, I'm pretty well polished, and there's an air of professionalism about it, I think.
Yeah, damn straight. Well, we can see this. And let's find out a little bit about you, Wade. You're a professional graphic designer.
Yeah. So I'm originally a country boy, but I moved to Melbourne about 4 years ago. I'm working as a freelance graphic designer. I was also a youth worker for like part-time for a few years of that, but primarily just working from myself from home, front of my computer, drawing on my sketch pad and typing web code.
All right. Let's get into the nitty-gritty now about this Fragged Empire universe. We're talking about the genetically engineered descendants of humanity. Stop me if I'm wrong here. Rebuilding a civilization in space after a terrible genocidal war. Walk us through it. Start with when this is set. How far in the future is this?
So I think we're looking at roughly about 15,000 years in the future. So humanity is dead long ago, and they created a race to sort of succeed them, and then that race created lots of other races. I call it a post-apocalyptic setting.
I like that line, yes.
Four races are just now re-emerging into space, just now reconnecting with each other. So it's that kind of that cusp of a new civilization. Earth is kind of like this mythical, legendary type of place where no one knows where it is. You know, even humans are sort of myth and legend. And so it's definitely a very foreign setting.
Now, you mentioned the polish that you brought to Fragged Empire, and it really is that artwork that's absolutely selling this RPG. Who's your artist? Where did you find them?
So I've got four different artists working for me, but I went through dozens. So, and I've been working on this for a fair few years. I myself am an illustrator. I kind of understand that field a lot. And so I really wanted to bring that professionalism to my approach to finding artists. So for artists, some of them I found and I contacted. Others, I put up an ad on a website called DeviantArt and said, hey, I'm looking for this art to produce this.
And the end result that you've got, is this a fairly good representation of what was in your head all along, or did you arrive at the look and feel together? Was it more of a collaboration?
I think largely it's kind of what I got in my head, because I went and found artists with a style that sort of matched what I had, and I really wanted something that was beautiful but a little bit gritty and a little bit painterly. Yeah, so I went and found artists that could fit that.
So 3 years of work on this so far. Do you see this as a completely finished product, or are you rolling this out sort of for play testing ahead of maybe wider publication one day? What's the plan?
So my original plan was to, you know, just a little indie book. I want to produce something that I'd be proud of and I wanted. But because this has been a lot more successful than I thought.
Yeah.
And in many ways, a more important figure then the amount of money that I've raised is the amount of backers. And so I've now come to the realization, hey, I think I've actually got a player base here. I think this is something I can work with. So I would love to produce more books on a regular basis.
All right, let's talk about some rules and get really nerdy. How quickly can you roll up a character in Fragged Empire?
Not that quickly from the sound.
It is a slightly crunchy system.
Yep.
But I'm hoping it's intuitive. So because it's very new, it does take you a little bit to get your head around it. But I know I can roll up a character. Probably takes me about half an hour.
Now, I don't know too much about your combat system as yet, but I know that you're using miniatures, and I know that you're using a system that's based on rolls of 3d6s. Yeah. How heavy is the workload for the GM in Fragged Empire?
I've tried to keep it fairly light, because to me, a GM, you want to be paying attention to the story and the feel about it, and you really don't want to do number crunching.
I know. This is always the curse of the GM. I mean, I'm always the guy who wants to be playing these things, and no one else is running the bloody game, so I'm the guy who has to end up doing all the homework. So yeah, tell me it's easy to run, Wade, please.
Yeah. So I've tried to make it easy for the GM in a lot of ways. I like monsters... minimal sort of keeping track. You just sort of keep track of their damage here and there. And I've got a bunch of monsters that are like once they hit, then they die.
Cool.
But then for non-combat, I've also put in a bunch of stuff for players to be motivated to go and find jobs and missions and stuff. So, because it's designed for like sandbox style games. So sort of the GM just letting the players go. There's a lot of stuff in there for like players to really be motivated to go and, you know, do their trading or do research and, you know, come up with their own plans as well.
Okay. But there are adventures included in this package as well, yeah?
Yeah. So I'm giving a Kickstarter exclusive adventure with all backers of at least $30. It's going to be like, bunch of pre-made characters for people if they want, have it pretty well planned out, and that's that good introduction sort of easing people into the system.
Okay, now there's multiple levels that you can support Fragged Empire at. I won't go through them all. Just get yourself onto Kickstarter, and you've only got a couple of days left to do that. I think you wrap up up this weekend, yeah?
Can't believe it's nearly over.
And there's all sorts of add-ons like GM screens and PDFs galore, and there's a leather-bound version of the rule set as well, which looks fantastic.
Yeah, special collector sort of one.
All right, it's all available on Kickstarter, Fragged Empire. Wade, thanks a lot for talking to us, mate. Wade Dyer, he's the creator of Fragged Empire, and he is knocking it out of the park as we speak. Well done, buddy.
Thanks, Trent.
That was Wade Dyer and Trent talking about Fragged Empire, a great new Aussie RPG. Check it out on Kickstarter, as I said.
I've just logged on. There's 3 days to go the Fragged Empire campaign. His original target was $15,000. He's raised $82,643.
That's amazing.
From 955 backers. And you really do have to see this because it's just a first-class production that he's put together.
Okay. When we come back, we're going to talk about going to the pub.
Woo-hoo.
And hanging out with friends and playing games.
For a change.
Tassie band Dirty Love, Kings and Queens and DeLorean with Destitute Timer. That brings us to this time on The Dice Man Cometh at Edge Radio 99.3 FM. My name's Trent and that is Mark.
Thank you very much, Trent. So, you're out in the pub with a few mates. What are you going to do besides drink and talk and have a boring old time?
I hate drinking and talking.
Yeah, that's right. Me too. So, what I like to do when I go to the pub is I whip out a game.
A what?
I whip out a game.
Oh, sorry.
And, you know, look, there are so many great games that we play, that we know, that we talk about, but not all of them can you lay down on the bar, on a small table, in a pub. So really what we're talking about are things that are relatively light,
mm-hmm.
only a couple of rules that take up little space, that are not going to care too much maybe if you spill a drink on them, and therefore don't have too many components. These are probably the most ideal pub games.
And suffice to say, Dungeon Lords is not one of them.
No, I don't think Dungeon Lords is going to get a run in the pub anytime soon.
Because also there is a cringe factor with this, and let's be honest about it. We're nerds. Quite openly and happily, but it doesn't mean we have to flaunt it and invite ridicule in public, because not everybody understands, Mark. Not everybody's like us. The world's a cruel and unusual and a harsh place.
Unfortunately, you're correct. But on the flip side, you know, I have seen the situation, even here in our local establishments, where the right game in the right space brings people over going, oh, that looks interesting. What's that? I remember upstairs in the New Sydney, a local pub, the waitresses and waiters even coming over every time they walk past with a plate, they'd stop and say, "Oh, what's happening now?" Like, people get involved, people get engaged, people see it's fun.
So what have you got in mind?
Look, there's probably a few different things. If you look at games that are sort of more like your traditional games that maybe people played in pubs or salons or parlours in the past, things like Liar's Dice or Bluff, things like Skull and Roses or Skulls that I've mentioned where it's just beer coasters you're flipping over, things like that are perfect for your pub situation.
Mm-hmm. And they fit in your pocket usually.
Absolutely right. And similarly, card games. You know, one of our favourite card games we've talked about a lot, Love Letter. 16 cards and a few little cubes, really easy to take to a pub. And other type of card games such as We Didn't Play Test It At All.
Oh, really?
Or Flux.
Hang on.
Or Cockroach Poker. Those sort of things you can explain very quickly.
I really hesitate to recommend We Didn't Play Test This At All, which is the name of a game.
Yeah.
Which literally means they didn't play test it.
And of course it has the fabulous expansion We Didn't Play Test This Either.
And We Didn't Play Test This At All Legacy.
Yeah, that's right. I still haven't got that one to the table. But look, you know what, those simple card games, I mean, people know Flux. It can be a pain in the backside, but it's not bad for a pub situation.
These are very light sort of recommendations.
Yeah, and look, I think mostly pub games are going to tend towards the light. I mean, a classic one we have had lots and lots of success with, The Great Dalmuti.
Absolutely.
We know, which we've loved sitting around even at dinner playing that game.
Essentially, The Great Dalmuti is a glorified version of a game whose title I actually can't say on the radio. Maybe some people have called it Spit in the past, although there's a few different games that card games I see labelled as Spit or... there's a Great Dalmuti, there are peons, there are merchants in between. Being the Great Dalmuti brings some benefits to it. Essentially, you're trying to... You distribute a whole deck of cards and you're trying to get rid of as many as you possibly can. And then you reassign the roles and go all over again.
And you've got status around the table from the lowest peon, the greater peon, up to the Great Dalmuti. And so it's a game of moving around the table and swapping spots. And it can be hilarious. You know, the byplay between the upper classes and the lower classes can make for a hilarious night, particularly at a dinner table.
We've taken over restaurants.
We have, yeah. And look, other simple games like Jungle Speed, grabbing that big plastic totem out of the middle of the table, that can work really well.
Now, hang on. What, you're making patterns in front of yourself, and as soon as you complete it, you've got to grab a token?
No, so you've got coasters again, sort of, that you're flipping over. And when you've got coasters that match, or coasters that the colours that match, or the patterns that match, it's mostly about matching.
It's a memory game?
No, it's more observation, because you've got 2, 3, 4 people, and you're looking at what their coaster is, then you flip one over. Oh, I've got a yellow one, you've got a yellow one, bang. Okay. We both got to grab for the plastic totem-y thing in the middle. Mm-hmm. So those sort of games. Dice games, another great thing for pubs. Zombie dice, Martian dice, you know, they're quick. You can play them a number of times. They're really easy to explain.
Zombie dice is not a great game, though.
Who doesn't enjoy rolling fistfuls of dice?
That's true, but you could do better than
zombie.
Yeah,
you can. Okay, give me a better dice game.
That you could play in a pub?
Yeah.
King of Tokyo?
You could at a pinch, because it doesn't take a huge amount of space, and it does look good for people walking past.
Look, the game that I always go back to for playing in a pub is Carcassonne, believe it or not. Sure, it takes up a fair bit of table space, but look, it's easy. There's not many rules. You can play aggressively, right, which is really, you know, once the beer starts flowing, that worst side of your nature is going to start coming out.
Yes.
And you can play Carcassonne in a way that's very offensive because you're blocking people.
Yeah.
And it's hard to lose the pieces as well.
Yes, you're right there. Look, one, and actually, talking about dice games, one that came to mind for me, we played it at BorderCon. Actually, I don't think you played it. Diavolo, where you're rolling a fistful of dice and you've got one dice that tells you what you have to do or which dice you have to find. And you've got other dice of different colours with different little pictures on them. And then you've got these other little devils that you've got to pick up and I can't remember it exactly. But it's quite simple, very elegant, simple rules, looks fun.
And you're leaving what you've rolled that's successful and then re-rolling.
No, so you basically do it all at once. And then you've got this big grey dice that says you've got to pick the one with the lowest. And you've got three different colours. You've got black dice, red dice, and white dice, I think. And it might tell you which... You've got to grab a die of the colour that has the highest number. Or you have to grab a die of the one that has the most evens, or those sort of rules.
And Diavolo.
Yeah.
Don't know.
Sort of got a little devilish theme. Tok Woodman.
Oh, God, don't even get me started.
I've spoken a lot about this game. I love it, and every time I bring it out, the table is in the stitches. Now, yes, you've got to stick it in your bag with a big plastic tree and everything like that, but again, you know, it's not going to be damaged if it falls on the ground, if you spear beer on it, because it is very sturdy. And it just improves the more you drink that game.
I would like to nominate a slightly more highbrow game for your pub.
Mm.
And I know you don't like this game. Mm. And I know you're gonna stare daggers at me. Condottieri. Condottieri comes. It's a tiny little area control game themed around the Italian Renaissance. The Condottieri were generals of mercenary armies, and you are taking over various provinces in Italy with your army, which consists of cards.
Mm.
And you're playing a battle line out in front of you with various numbers in it, just trying to not outbid, but you know, outmatch your opponent. I think the Condottieri is a great game.
Yeah, look, I do see the appeal of it. I think I've had a couple of bad experiences with it. I should try it again, and it is better with more players, I think.
That's true.
Yeah, look, a couple more. Word on the Street, which is a word game you can play in pubs, where you're battling backwards and forwards for different letters in the alphabet. Cash and Guns, you know, that would be a fun one for the pub.
Now, Cash and Guns, what you're talking about there is you're inviting people to sit out in public pointing
guns
plastic
at each other,
guns
That's
at
right.
each other
Phone
over
guns.
A huge pile of Monopoly money in the middle of the table. Sure, why not? There's a new version of that game being reprinted soon. I think we might have mentioned that previously.
Yes.
Yeah, but I'm
and look,
be all
speaking
over that.
Of new versions, the one I want to leave you with, I can't wait for this.
Mm.
Baron Munchausen, which is the game of boasting and creating the most amazing boasts, and then your friends basically sort of using these chips to buy into your boast to divert you down to a different track where you've got to then come back and improve your boast. It sounds fantastic. I've never actually played it. I've seen it.
Yeah, falls more in slightly more towards the RPG category.
Yeah, but
almost.
But to me, it's the ideal sort of game where you're sitting around a pub, basically almost like spinning yarns the game.
Yep. And my understanding of it is that if you like something like Fiasco or the idea of an RPG then Baron Munchausen's going to be a great idea for you.
Yep. Now, you know what, Trent? Sometimes I don't like the things you say, but I do love the way you talk.
Oh, this is a segue to a song, isn't it?
The dulcet tones of Claire Bowditch with I Love the Way You Talk. Claire Bowditch was just recently in Hobart, actually, and I went to see her.
And how was she?
It was one of the most disappointing concerts I have ever seen, as a matter of fact.
To Claire.
Look, I think the thing was, it was part of the Festival of Voices. She'd done a workshop in the afternoon.
Ah, okay.
She clearly had one or two or 12 glasses of wine. And, you know, between getting the choir to sing a couple of songs, getting Adelita to come up on stage with her sing with her, that was pretty cool, actually. That was before Adelita went up and played at the Republic Bar. It was quite interesting, but she only actually played about three songs of her own and sort of mucked around with them, and she got some woman out of the audience to do an interpretive dance to Babushka that she sang. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it looked like that Claire Bowditch was having an awesome time. On the other hand.
Those babushka dolls, they're so full of themselves. Hey, we want to talk, boom, boom. Boom, boom. We want to talk about board game.
Comedy Gold!
Board game awards. I am what is commonly referred to in technology circles as a late adopter, which means I like to sit back and wait and see what everybody else is doing before I get involved, because I don't want to risk my money on items, products, and games that I might end up not liking. So I like to sit back and, you know, there's new games. There's about 802 new games released every week at the moment in this golden age of board gaming that we're currently living through.
I can keep up.
And I'm entirely serious about that remark, the golden age of board gaming, it's happening right now, and we're proof.
We're part of it.
So I do keep an eye on awards and the things that are nominated, the things that win, and a couple of announcements over the past month. The Origin Awards were announced in June as a part of the Origins, what's it called?
It's a convention. I think it actually started in the sort of the role-playing tabletop miniature type world and then sort of strayed across to board games.
So the best board game from the Origins Awards announced last month in Ohio, it was...
Trains! Woo-hoo!
Yes.
I still have yet to play it, but I'm really looking forward to trying it. I have a feeling that someone here in our local group has and is going to bring it to the Winter Games Fest.
It's a deck builder with a board, supposedly better than Dominion, as far as deck building goes. Trains, I hope it's good, because... I'm not going to try it.
Well, the interesting thing was it won Best Board Game, which was an industry-voted award, and it also won the fan favourite, which was voted for by people attending the con. And
it
usually
must have something going for it, but I'm not going to find out what it is.
I was going to say, because usually with the Origins Award, the fan favourite is the one that generates the most buzz on the weekend, which usually also corresponds to someone who has the biggest presence there. And often it's been won many, many times by Looney Labs, the people who produce Flux, because they have a really big presence at Origins.
Yep.
So to see Trains, which is from... is it from AEG? I'm not so sure.
You're testing me now.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I can't imagine they would have been the company that would have had a massive presence at Origins, so maybe it's a good game.
Best card game from the Origins Awards.
Yes.
Love Letter.
Yes.
We've talked about it often and thoroughly recommend it for gameplay reasons and price reasons as well. Best family slash party slash children's game, Three Little Pigs. Not familiar with this one. It's some kind of press your luck dice rolling game where you're rolling to build houses made of different materials, oddly enough, until a wolf comes in. Best collectible card game, Pokemon. Black and White, Legendary Treasures.
Yeah, well.
You played Pokemon, didn't you, for a while? Didn't you have some Pokemon decks?
Oh, my kids were into it for a little while.
Oh, yeah, right. Your kids. Yeah, sure. Right. Still popular, the franchise that won't die. The best historical board game, 1775 Rebellion, which is a sort of retelling of the American Revolution and an update of a previous game, 1812, The Invasion of Canada. It's sort of a light war game with a bit of card play in it. Best... miniatures, or best miniature rule set, Marvel Hero Clicks, Avengers versus X-Men, or as I like to know it, like to call it, Plastic Crack. Best RPG from the Origin Awards, Numenera. This is an interesting one.
Oh, yeah, Monty Cook?
Yep, it's a Kickstarter. It set the record on Kickstarter for the most funding raised by any RPG. It set 1 billion years into the future. I'm not kidding, it is.
Yeah.
And what's notable about it, that you create a character by making just 3 choices, that's it.
Yeah,
a really interesting system, Numenera.
And wasn't Monty Cook the brains behind D&D, third edition, I think. He was one of the sort of key drivers.
You mean the last one that was good?
Yeah, exactly. One of the key drivers for that sort of golden era of D&D. So it's interesting to see him moving on to something like that.
And the other awards that have been announced recently are the Dice Tower Awards. The Dice Tower being a huge network of podcasts that come out of the States, and we are not worthy to lick the spittle from the bottom of their shoes. But hey, we're going to just, you know, quickly have a look at some of the awards that were presented just recently at Dice Tower Con in Florida. Best reprint of a game, Steve Jackson's Ogre. And you could hardly give it to anyone else. I think the size of the box alone that Ogre came in after the Kickstarter that they ran, you got to check it out on Kickstarter if you haven't actually seen that video. Best party game, One Night Ultimate Werewolf. Have you played this one?
No, and because I don't even know that it's been released very long. It's basically another iteration of Werewolf,
but with no player elimination.
Yeah, exactly, and a bit like a combination of Werewolf and some of those other multiplayer games we've talked about.
Like the Resistance, and everybody has a hidden role, and
One Night Ultimate Werewolf. Mm. Best artwork and also a slew of other awards went to Eldritch Horror.
And it is a fantastic looking game.
Do you like it though?
Look, I had a great game when I played it, but I know the difference between the two games we played in. Mine had four players and it seemed to sing along nicely. In fact, that night we played it twice in like 3 hours. Mm. And not just because we got our butts kicked really quickly. But I know you played a six-player game, I think, and it just drew on and on and on.
It was a mistake, yeah. Mm. It's the globe-trotting Indiana Jones versus Cthulhu theme, and on paper I should like it, but it's just fallen flat when I played it. Best components in the Dice Tower Awards went to Battle Lore.
Second edition.
Which is a two-player miniature war game for 12-year-olds, seemingly. Best components and best two-player game. It won. It just doesn't look any...
But you know it's a re-release. So Battle Lore came out and it had historical miniatures. It had dwarves and elves and all that sort of stuff. They've even
released the dwarves and elves from history.
Yeah. But it had the fantasy races because it was originally done by Days of Wonder.
Okay.
And then then it got taken over by Fantasy Flight Games.
Yep.
Then they've actually re-released, what's it called? The Game of Thrones version, where you're actually playing the houses in the Game of Thrones against each other.
Really?
Yeah. And then now they've released this second edition, and now I think they've based it in their Terranoff universe, which is the same universe as Rune Wars and Runebound and a whole bunch of their other franchises.
Well, clearly you're the expert on Battle Lore then.
I never played it, though.
Best co-op game went to Freedom, the Underground Railroad, and also this one, best theme and best new designer. This is the one where you're rescuing slaves
out of the South and getting them to the North of America
across the border. Fantastic, controversial theme. Yeah. Really, really tastefully and well implemented from all accounts. Can't wait to try that one. Best strategy game, Russian Railroads, another train game.
Yeah,
that apparently doesn't have trains in it.
No, but it has railways and rail.
Best expansion for the Dice Tower Awards, Scoundrels of Skullport.
Oh, yes, the Lords of Waterdeep expansion.
And I have to agree with that one.
Yeah, it is great.
Yeah. Best family game went to Forbidden Desert, which is kind of a re-implementation of the Forbidden Island rule set by Matt Lecoq. It's a cooperative game where you're working together to collect items from a series of tiles that are either sinking or being blown away in a sandstorm. Frankly, I don't want to... they say that Forbidden Desert's the better version, but I've got Forbidden Island. I don't want to buy the same game again.
Yeah, although apparently they have changed it up quite a bit. But yeah, I was quite interested and surprised to see that. One that I really was surprised about, I'm sure you'll have something to say about this.
Oh?
Most innovative game. One of our absolute favourite of all-time games we've played, of course, not... Rampage.
I know.
And I noticed it was a nominee or a close finisher in many other of these categories as well. What are they thinking?
Rampage, when I first heard it was coming out, because I played the video game in the 80s, I was very excited. Mm. Fell very, very flat when we played it. And it just seems to be that people are excited about the fact that they get to throw pieces at little meeple-made skyscrapers on the board and blow spittle across all the... components with their fiery monster breath.
Yeah, look, I mean, it fell flat for me. It was interesting to look at, interesting to set up, and then it's like, that's the game.
Best small publisher, Stonemaier Games, for their effort, Euphoria, Building a Better Dystopia. This is a very heavy Euro worker placement game where the dice represent the amount of knowledge that your workers have, and if they get too knowledgeable, they actually give up and leave, and they won't work for you. Yeah. I like this idea so much, I've actually ordered this
today. Yeah. You've ordered this Euro game.
Listen.
This Euro game.
I am tired.
Are you hearing this out there?
I am tired of this idea that I do not like playing heavy Euro games. All right, just give me a chance, man.
Sure.
And the game of the year from the Dice Tower Awards, Caverna, the sequel to Agricola, about playing farmers in a cave. That's it, isn't it?
Yeah, but, oh, look, I know, it must be because so many people can relate to that theme, farming in a cave.
You played Agricola.
I really like Agricola.
It's hugely popular.
Yeah, and it is another one of those games where you can pick 30 things to do each turn and you can pick two or three of them. It really is, and I can see the criticism of it was, you've got to spread yourself very thin because you've got to have one of each of animals and you've got to have the different vegetables and you've got to build your house and you've got to do this and you've got to do everything. And if you fall down on even one of them, then you crash and burn. And apparently Caverna, one of its strengths is you can specialise. You can be the best corn farmer. You can have the most pigs. You know, you can corner the mud hut market, whatever you want to do. You're not stretched so thin. Look, every time I hear about it, I think, do we need another cave farming game where you're dwarven cave farmers? Oh, I don't know, but I must admit I've seen it being played at the Hobart Games Society, and the people who were playing it were very excited and very much enjoying it. So, hey, I'm willing to give it a go.
Who are we to judge?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we're certainly not voting on these awards for the Dice Towers or for Origins, but there you go.
If they wanted us to, we would.
We wouldn't say no.
That's right.
If you want to ask us. So there you go. Look, some titles there from the past year that you might like to consider for your next purchase or not. These are the ones that are floating to the top like scum on a pond.
Right. And look, speaking of the Hobart Game Society, we know that many of you out there, you don't live in Hobart. We understand that. But
some of you live in Portugal.
Yeah, or Milan.
Apparently so.
Yeah. Now, a really great opportunity to visit us in Hobart, of course, would be the celebration of gaming we have in winter. We call it Winter Games Fest.
Which is now just 2 weeks away.
That's right.
August 9th and 10th, the Best Western Hotel. The secret accommodation code word is Ellison Hawker. Ellison Hawker. The Best Western Hotel hosting DICON for us, including the Hobart Winter Games Fest.
So look, come and visit us. Come and play some games with us. If you can't make it, then hit us up on the Facebook page. Hit us up on Board Game Geek. What other things can you do? Listen to us on the Edge Radio website. You can stream us on the hogs.org.au page. You can grab us on iTunes. Leave us a review on iTunes. We love to hear from you.
And listen, we have heard from a few people. So just before we go, some quick shout outs to some of our listeners. Hogs, Nick Bowler, Chris Wade, Paul Stasia, who's designer of the game Time Fight, which is currently under development. Richard Koala Canning, John Bauer in Melbourne, comic nerd Al Keynes, horseshoe crab enthusiast Don Bone. And Michael Dart, who's a mad Geelong supporter, but nonetheless will allow him to continue listening to the show. Thank you very much for your support of the Dice Man Cometh. We do appreciate everybody who listens and clicks.
We do absolutely appreciate it. We are going to be back again next week, but until then, we have been Trent and Mark with the Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and we will see you next week.
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.